everyone. My name is Belinda Granger, and I'm the professional liaison for Challenge Family. I'm also known throughout the triathlon world as being a bit of a mother hen to the pro athletes. Of course, given the current circumstances, I've been thinking about the athletes a lot lately. So we came up with the idea of Coffee Calls with Belinda, which basically gives me and you an opportunity to check in with them all and see how they're all going. So welcome to the official Challenge Family podcast. I think it's time for a coffee. And welcome back to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I am Belinda Granger, of course, and with me today, a very, very special guest and one that I have been wanting to interview for quite some time now because I find her so incredibly fascinating. And apart from that, she's also one of the most beautiful souls that I have ever met in the sport of triathlon. Welcome, Rachel McBride. Gosh, I didn't even get your name right then, Rach. Welcome, Rachel.
Hey, Belinda. And yeah, just a reminder that my pronouns are they, them.
Absolutely. And speaking about that, and of course, Rachel, most people in the triathlon world know you as the Purple Tiger. We will get back to that in a little bit because I want to know where that started. But going back to they, them, of course, I recently listened to a fascinating podcast that you did where you talked about being what it was like to come out as non-binary, being a non-binary athlete. Oh, I'm getting my words mixed up today. So I'd really like, before we get into it, can you explain exactly what non-binary means?
So non-binary is basically someone who identifies, their gender identity is something that is outside of the binary. So they don't identify as boy or man or woman or girl, but somewhere different. So some people may identify as like right in between or somewhere on the spectrum. They may identify as both man and woman. They may identify as agender, with like having no gender. And that's kind of the non-binary is for a lot of people an umbrella term for all of that.
All of that, everything underneath that. And so obviously, you know, for example, when I introduce you on the show as she's one of, that's not you, you know, it's not she. So saying he, she, male, female, you would say they are one of.
Correct.
Is that correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, it's funny though, and you know, we were discussing this just before we started the podcast. Everything gets so ingrained. Society, you know, you're brought up to be, to think a certain way. And, you know, we're talking about it, titles and, you know, you're a boy or you're a girl, you're a man, you're a woman, you're a lady, male, female, even when you're married, you're Mrs. or you're Ms. And it's very, very difficult because this has been repeated over and over and over again. And, you know, I'm 49 years of age, turning 50 at the end of this year. And, you know, I start to question it myself. Why are we restricted by the rules that so-called society has made for us? And so listening to your podcast just made me question so many things. And it's fascinating, but I still find myself falling back into the old ways. It's very, very difficult to step outside of what you've been brought up with. But is this something that you've known all along, Rach, or is it something that you've only discovered in the last, say, 15, 20 years of life?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would agree. Absolutely. It is about making a conscious effort to think outside the box and to use different pronouns. It's not something that comes naturally. And it does sort of, you know, your learning right now about this is really changing the way that you sort of you perceive people in the world. And that's really huge. Going back to the question of like, when did I know I was different? I mean, I knew I was different from a very young age. I was really androgynous. Like I was a quote unquote tomboy. But I was super androgynous as a kid. And that just really came naturally to me. Of course, I went through phases of like having a you know, a dress phase where I wore dresses all the time and I had long hair. But then as I became an adult and I kind of struggled a lot with people, like adults asking me if I was a boy or a girl all the time. And when I was 5 years old, I actually got my ears pierced. So I would have earrings in hopes that, you know, I wouldn't be misgendered, quote unquote, as a boy. And it didn't really work. But and I still get asked if I am a boy or a girl all my life. I have had folks, you know, sort of strangers asking me these questions. And so for me, and I used to be really upset by that because I didn't. I have always felt like an other the way that I walk through the world, as like I don't really fit into this boy side of things, but I also, I mean, I'm supposed to be a woman, but it doesn't feel right. Like something feels off. And the longest time I didn't really have the language to understand that. And I also wasn't, I didn't have the confidence to really sort of look inside myself and really recognize who I really was. Because, you know, I learned of the term genderqueer and non-binary when I was in my 20s and I started university. And I got in with like super progressive folks and that was like, all of a sudden I was like, oh yeah, cool. This is something I really identify with. However, I didn't change my pronouns. I continued to use she, her pronouns. At some point I started in my 30s, I also started using they, them. So I would go by they, them or she, her. And it's only been in the past couple of years that I have really, sat down with myself and done some big soul searching and recognized that the only reason I was holding on to those she, her pronouns and that identity as a woman is because, on one hand, because I am in a very binary career. I'm in a sport where, you do have to fit in a box. And there didn't feel like there was room for anywhere in between or like an identity, outside of woman and female. And also, I also recognized with continuing to use she, her is that it was a way of helping other people not feel uncomfortable. So I didn't feel like I had the confidence and the energy up until recently to really just own that I am not she, her. I am they, them.
Yeah.
And it takes a lot of effort, you know. It's like, you know, like at the beginning of the podcast, you know, I had reminded you of pronouns and you still use she, her. And I know it's like,
yeah, exactly.
It's tough but that's the thing is that, you know, it takes a lot of energy to kind of, I mean, to correct people all the time. But the more and more that I recognize that this is really my authentic self, the easier it becomes and the more confidence I have and the more, investment I have in having these conversations, because I don't want to be hiding anymore. I don't want to feel out of place anymore. And because I have finally like found language around my identity, all of these things and like puzzle pieces have been fitting together in terms of just like, I have, you know, the first time that my family used my pronouns was such a, like, it was such a moment for me that I was in the right place, that I had found like who I was, because it felt so amazing.
Yeah. Do you think that the sport of triathlon has helped in a way, or do you think it's been it's hindered or not prevented, but, you know, obviously you said in the sport you've got two choices. You either race as a male or you race as a female. That's it. You know, when you tick the box when you enter, when you do an online registration. I mean, and obviously you race as a female pro. So in a way, you know, your sport probably prevented you from coming out sooner. But in saying that, now that you have, do you think that sport will be a great platform for you to get this out to the greater world?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, my career as an athlete for sure has delayed this this coming out, absolutely. And at the same time has sort of forced me to reckon with that otherness that I feel, because I am constantly put in that space of like this, I am competing with in like the women's category or the female category, and standing at you know, standing at a start line and like just feeling really out of place in a way. And so it actually in some ways has probably like highlighted that otherness that I feel and helps me recognize like who I am authentically. And I do absolutely, I am actually really grateful for the platform that I have now, the fans and supporters and especially sponsors who are helping me tell my story and supporting me through this. And also that I feel this is one of the big motivators to be so vocal, and to be so outright now and having these conversations is because I have this platform and I have people listening, and there are other non-binary folks out there listening. There are other people who may be questioning their gender, or there may be other people who are just learning a whole lot, about a world that they didn't know about, and that sort of personal connection is, I think, really helps folks learn and feel that compassion and empathy, and understand something that can be really challenging if they have never been exposed to something like that.
No, I totally agree. And speaking of that, I also listened a while back to your interview that the PTO between Cody Beals and yourself. And of course, Cody Beals came out not so long ago as well as being a gay athlete, a professional triathlete who is gay. And that interview between you both was really cool. I've actually really been enjoying the PTO athletes, where you get both athletes asking each other questions. And one of the interesting things, and we spoke about this before we started, was I know when I met you for the very first time, and I couldn't even tell you when it was. I know it was in Kona, but it was a long, long time ago when I was still a bit young and a bit silly. And I remember looking at you for the first time and just automatically assuming, oh, yeah, well, that's Rachel McBride. She's gay. And purely making that assumption because of the way you looked. And I'm sure this is not the first time you've heard this story. So, you know, I thought it was great that Cody and yourself actually talking about it together. And what is it like in our sport? Because I'm trying, obviously, in the sport of triathlon, it's not a huge sport on the professional side of things. Has it been accepting? So your fellow athletes, obviously, you've just said then your sponsors and a lot of your fans, so a lot of the age group athletes have been really accepting. But what about going back before you actually announced? What was it like, you know, when people just automatically assumed, oh, Rachel McBride, she's gay?
Yeah, they are gay.
Yeah, they are gay. They are gay.
I mean, yeah, I think that has absolutely been happening. It's been happening for the majority of my adult life. You know, and that's the interesting thing when you really dig deep into it, is that intersection between gender identity and sexuality. So people often really assume that they are the same thing, that just because I may be more androgynous or masculine presenting, that means that I am gay. and and that's absolutely not the case. I mean, I remember, I've lived several years in Germany, spent a lot of time in Germany, and I will just have to say, women of a certain generation in Germany are very masculine, relatively masculine. And I would look around at these women and be like, oh, they totally look gay, but no. They're just German. It's just that style. It's a sort of really kind of eye-opening. That's one thing that, honestly, it has, because for the past 10 years I have been in a relationship with a man, it's been really easy for me to be in the closet in a lot of ways. It's only recently that I have been more public about being in relationship with a woman that has also, I'm having those conversations. And it's also, it's really incredible to see other, especially female professional athletes who are super out, like Nikki Bartlett is amazing. Awesome. And Lenny as well, who, both of them are super out, and it really creates this, a community of like, it's okay. Like we are all professionals. Absolutely. And we are all like of differing, like we're out there. There are LGBT folks out there in the professional ranks. It's not something that is being hidden anymore. And you really see the allies coming out, whether it be from other professionals or from the amateur ranks as well.
Yeah. Look, I totally agree. And it still baffles me though, Rach, that it's taken this long. I mean, as I said, I was lucky enough to grow up in a family where I come from an incredibly open family, and being gay, being straight, bi, it didn't matter. It was just all about the person themselves. I will forever love my parents for bringing me up in such an amazing environment. But I know that, for a lot of others, it's not the case. And it just seems like, it's 2020, and that we are even having to have this conversation sort of pisses me off a little bit, because it just shouldn't be, it just shouldn't be, but it is.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, of course we have come incredible lengths in the past couple of decades in terms of acceptance of LGBTQ folks. And I think there's still so much work to do. And I think in the world of triathlon, it's a very straight laced, pardon the pun.
Yes.
Community. And, it comes from a very, it's just very, feels very clean cut. And, the fact that it's like Heather Jackson and I are the most tattooed, pro athletes out there. And it's like so weird and freaky. The triathlon world, I think, is a little bit behind maybe the times.
I totally agree. But, on the flip side of that, I think both yourself and Heather are the coolest people in triathlon as well, so
which we're is pretty crazy. Cool. I'll have to admit,
cool. You're very cool. Very cool. You are.
I love
and
HJ.
Also, oh yeah, she's magnificent human being as you are yourself. And I remember when I first actually got to meet you in person and have a conversation, and I walked away thinking, wow, what a quiet and thoughtful soul you are. I don't know. I think just because with the cool haircut, the crazy awesome tats, you just expect this person to be loud and full of confidence and a little mad almost. And what I got was the exact opposite. You're so thoughtful. You're incredibly intelligent, and just such a sweet, thoughtful person. And it's so fun. Again, it goes back to what society's taught you to expect. Oh, this person's got tattoos, so they've got to be wild and crazy.
Yeah.
it's just not the case.
No, absolutely. And I mean, I've had a lot of fun in my adult life playing around with that. I remember.
Oh, I bet you have.
Yeah. In my 20s, I was volunteering in the hospital, and I was volunteering on some unit. And, you know, I would show up in like my colored hair. I had a mohawk at the time and like a.
Love it.
And like a motorcycle jacket and, you know, was really punked out. And the nurses there, like, I still remember one nurse who was like, when you first came in, I was like so worried, but then, you know, you just started talking and you're just so nice.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm like, well, yeah, exactly. Like, don't judge a book by its cover, you know?
By its cover. Oh my gosh, it's so true. It is so true. And, you know, every single human being is guilty of it, you know, or has been guilty of it at some stage. But, you know, and obviously last year in Roth, I got to spend a lot more time with you too. And it was just, I still have a little chuckle every now and again because I go back to when I first met you and then, you know, obviously fast forward to last year in Roth. And it just, I laugh because it's just, it's so true. People are so guilty of judging a book by its cover.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, that is what evolution has brought, you know, has brought humans to, like, that is why especially the gender question is really challenging to break out of the boy-girl thing, because it is part of how we have evolved. We have evolved to put people in boxes, to judge them by what they look like. Okay, is this someone that I can trust? Is this someone I need to be scared, you know, worried about? Like, you know, all of these things that it's supernatural to judge people. And it's also, we are human and have these incredible brains that allow us to think beyond those instincts as well. And to maybe, you know, of course, I look at people and I put them in a box, and then I am able to recognize, oh, take a step back, and maybe that person doesn't identify as how I've put them in a box, or like, just because they are wearing this thing or doing this thing doesn't necessarily mean that they are a certain way. And it's really helped me open my eyes to just being more curious about people, and asking questions and being more, not making assumptions about folks and, you know, why it's, you know, especially now with COVID, it's like, it's like, you know, I would judge people for the type of mask they were wearing. And then I was like, well, no, like, why am I doing that? That person could have some, you know, really serious health condition, or like, you know, everybody's got their own story and you cannot see that story.
And that's exactly what I've been having this conversation. I have a fantastic run group, and there's probably about seven or eight of us that run every Sunday, and we spend the entire 16, 17 kilometers talking about issues around the world, we always say we're solving the problems of the world.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, it's unreal. I mean, it's hilarious, some of the conversations we have. But one thing, you know, I'm the oldest of the group, but we're all, you know, most of us are 40 and above. And one thing we've noticed since turning 40, and obviously I'm closer to 50, is that you're right. We don't judge books by a book by its cover anymore. And we do question things. And we also, I think the most important thing that all of us have learned, that if we want something or we want to be a certain way, that we don't care what other people think anymore. Whereas I think in your 20s and your 30s, and particularly with social media, you say you don't care, but you do. You care what other people think about you. It's just part of human nature that you do. Mm-hmm. You know, that other people's opinions can hurt. But then it gets to a stage, I suppose, when you reach a certain level of maturity, when you're like, you know what? I don't actually care what you think. Here, this is who I am. You either take it as it is or you leave it. And if you decide to leave it, then I'll respect your decision. But I'm not going to waste time and energy over it. I'll be honest, it took me till I was about 42 before I could genuinely say that I didn't care what other people think anymore. But it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm in the same boat. I'm 42 and I am just having...
I was going to ask how old you were. So, yeah. Okay, so 42. Yeah. Well, that's interesting because that's the exact age that when I finally said to myself, you know what, stuff it. This is who I want to be.
Yeah.
This is my... these, and it went from there and it seems like you are in a similar situation.
Yeah, yep, absolutely. And to recognize that, and that's when I, you know, when I see folks who are in their teens and 20s and even 30s who are really being their authentic selves and like they have such courage. I think kids are growing up in a different world right
absolutely.
Now.
Absolutely. Yeah, I do too.
Yeah, and it's just really, really cool to see that.
Yeah, well, it's funny because I used to listen to my nan and pop say, oh, I remember in my day, and now I feel like I'm the one doing that, you know. It's like, hold on, you're not that old. Oh, gosh. It's so true, though. I've been coaching, just started coaching a junior swim squad, and to listen to some of the adult conversations I'm having with these 13-year-olds, I come home and I'm on an absolute high because – these are conversations that I would normally think of only having with a 21-year-old. So, you know, and this is these students are 12 and 13 years of age, and it's amazing. And I come home so chuffed because I think, wow, you know, this is where I would love all young adults to be, like these young, forward-thinking adults. And you just know, you think the world's in a good place if we can have more of these sorts of kids. The world's in a good place.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now let's get back to Purple Tiger, because obviously that is your nickname and has been for quite, well, ever since I've been following you as an athlete. Mm-hmm. Where did it come from? Where did it come from, and how long have you had it?
The tiger portion came from actually when I was at the end of high school. I finished high school in Berlin, and I had my hair like pretty much shaved, a little bit of a mohawk, and I had the shaved sides dyed as in like tiger stripes. And I was walking along the subway platform, and this little kid turned to his mom and said, "Guck mal, Mutti, eine Tigertante," which in English means, "Look, Mom, a tiger lady."
Oh, that's awesome.
And awesome. I know, it was so sweet. And my girlfriend at the time just thought this was hilarious, and so would call me Tigertante all the time. And then I just started using it as an alias and as, you know, taking the nickname forward. So that's kind of where the tiger portion came from. And of course, like, I grew up with cats. I love cats. I am obsessed with cats. And so it was really fitting. And then when I first, you know, where the purple came from is a bit of a mystery to me. What happened is that I, when I first turned pro, I had just graduated from the genetic counseling program, finished a master's in genetic counseling and had been like in a very straight-laced kind of mode for a number of years, and had really like didn't have dyed hair. My like hair was super normal. I was dressing in super normal clothes for the program. I had to cover up my tattoos and things like that. And it just felt really like constrictive. And so when I came out of the program and then turned pro and was basically like, the world's my oyster. I can be whoever I want to be now again. I shaved my head back into a mohawk and dyed it purple. And so I think that is kind of where that purple tiger came from. And then of course, when I joined forces with Wadi Inc, then, you know, the rest is history. Like, it really sort of exploded from there.
Oh, I love it. And of course, talking about Wadi Inc, you always, and I know this from watching you race for many, many years now, particularly when I've seen you in Kona, not only did you always have the coolest hair, but you also had the coolest race kit. You still do have the coolest race kit. So I actually wait to see, you know, when you get to the race morning and you strip off, and I'm like, okay, let's see what Rachel's wearing today. What kit she got today? And it's always cool. So, you know, I think what the relationship that you've got with Waddy Inc., it's definitely been brilliant and so cool to watch it evolve over the years.
Well, and you know what? I really credit Waddy for this journey that I am on right now, because when I first connected with him, I was in this place of like, well, I'm trying to get sponsors and like, I am sort of this character, but I was feeling like I needed to maybe fit in these boxes. And he was like, just keep doing you. Like, you are awesome. Yeah. Just do you. Like, don't try and fit in these boxes. And those words really resonated with me, and I have carried them for the past, how many years now? Seven or 8 years.
Wow.
That we've been working together, and really gave me the confidence of like, wow, I have this incredible sponsor behind me who is just encouraging me to just be myself, and that's okay. And so that's been just so awesome. I am really so grateful for those words early in my career.
Yeah, and I mean, even every time I've met Waddy and Heather, two of the greatest people in our sport, and I think we're very lucky to have them for sure. And you know, Heather's the same. You know, as you said, two of the only people in the sport to have tats, which I was always one of these people that wanted to get one and never got around to doing it, which is typical. When did you get your very first tat?
I think it was a couple of months after I turned 18. My folks said you can't get any tattoos or any more piercings until you turn 18. And so I think on my 18th birthday, I went out and got my ears pierced again. And a couple months later, got my first tattoo.
Oh, I love it. And how many have you got now?
Now I think I've counted, I think it's seven. One,
okay.
Two, three, four, five, six, seven. It's seven, but really nine, because two are covered up by the giant tiger that is now on my back.
Oh, okay. Yeah, which I love. I must admit, it's very cool. And gonna get any more? Or you think that's it?
Oh, gosh, of course. Yeah, absolutely.
Of course.
Yeah.
Love it.
Oh, no. This is a lifelong hobby for sure.
Yeah, oh, that's cool. Well, I love, I'll look forward to seeing the next one, that's for sure. Now, let's, talking about races, obviously at the moment, no races at all, 2020, although you got lucky and got to do Challenge Wanaka back in February. Now, I've spoken to a couple of people that are saying, well, you know, we were really lucky we got to do Challenge Wanaka back in February. Thankfully, we did.
Yeah.
But obviously, and then you did. So how many races did you get to do this year? You got to do two?
I got two. Yeah, I got two in and got my Kona qualification. So
I
feel like I feel so lucky that I was able to have that experience. And I mean, not only to have race experience, but to be in, to have checked off some incredible bucket list races.
Yeah.
You know, Wanaka is just such an incredibly special place to me. And that race is just amazing. So it really, you know, 2020 started off as a really incredible year for me.
Great year.
And, yeah.
It is funny. I mean, I must admit, New Zealand, if I had to choose two races, knowing that they might possibly be the only two I get to do all year, you know, Challenge Wanaka and then Ironman New Zealand, you couldn't really ask for two more spectacular events. So, You did well there, unknowingly, of course, but you did well. And, of course, qualifying for Kona this year, and then, of course, Kona in February has now also been cancelled. So are you able to roll that qualification over to Kona October 2021?
Yeah, yeah. So we've all been moved to 2021 now.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Well, that's something you can at least sigh of relief. You don't have to go through that again. So that's good. And And it obviously frees you up. I know you were definitely looking forward to returning to Challenge Roth this year. I know you had a goal to go sub 9.
Yeah.
Which I think, you know, definitely well within your means. Now that's of course Roth 2021. So same goal, still going for Roth 2021 and a sub 9.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's a huge goal. Like, of course, going back to Roth and yeah, last year I felt like I got so close that, the closest that I had ever, you know, it hadn't been a goal until I crossed that finish line in 9:06. And I was like, okay, I had a really terrible run at Roth. And like, I am much better than this. And if all my ducks are in a row and things go well, then sub 9 is absolutely possible on that course.
Definitely
for me.
Definitely doable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely doable. Well, I had a call last night with Felix and the team from Challenge Roth, and they're already preparing for next year and definitely wanting to get the pro field prepared. And I know personally from Felix that you are one of his favorite professional athletes. So I have no doubt that you will be on that start line again next year. That's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. Gosh, you know, the Felix and the family are just, they're so special. That race is so special. It was really one of the most, it was absolutely, I would say, probably the highlight of my career was that that experience in Roth last year. And this year, you know, the pro field was incredible. The lineup that we had was just going to be, it was going to be an incredible race. So I really hope everybody shows up in 2021.
Yeah, look, that is definitely the plan. Obviously, things can change, but hopefully, I know regardless, you know, it always manages to get a great field. But the awesome thing about Felix is that, yes, of course, he wants to get a great field there, but he's more interested in getting back the athletes that he knows appreciates the race as much as he does. So athletes like yourself, Laura Siddle, mm-hmm. And you see these athletes return year after year, and you just know it's and they're the athletes that Felix truly appreciates, because he just knows that they have the same passion for not only the sport but also for the race itself. And anyone that's been to Roth like yourself, you know it's not just a race. It's something far more, and it's something that the community and the surrounding areas just, they love that race like it's their own, that's for sure.
Yeah, yep, it's incredible. Never experienced anything like it.
No, it's pretty cool. Now, obviously, yep, Wānaka and Ironman New Zealand were the last races way back in late February and March. So what have you been doing with yourself since then? I mean, it's been months and months and months now. Obviously, summertime over there in Vancouver, mm-hmm. unlike here where it's winter. But have you been sticking to a fairly regimented training schedule, or have you now been using this time to actually do more of what you love? So not necessarily just doing swim, bike, run, but maybe doing some off-road. I know a lot of athletes that have got back into mountain biking, just doing things that they probably wouldn't normally be able to do just because of time constraints and because they are on such a strict training schedule.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it feels really different right now not to be in a super structured Ironman build. And I do, you know, what I have been doing is I'm still swim, bike, running a whole lot. I'm incredibly fit. However, yes, I've been doing it in a much less structured format. I have always used, or especially in the past year or two, I've actually used a lot of gravel riding as a training. You know, I've kind of spent less time on my TT bike and more time on the gravel bike, just because the roads are safer and it's a lot more fun and can be really, really challenging too. And so I have spent the majority of my time on my gravel bike and have gone on some trips, been exploring trails. You know, initially it was really just like riding around here and around town and some of the local trails. And then as things have opened up a little bit, we've been able to get out, and we're actually leaving on Friday for another trip, heading up into northern BC and hitting some roads and checking off a lot of things from my bucket list, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
We had an amazing, Shane and I had an amazing gravel trip in the Rockies a couple of weeks ago. And yeah, next week we're heading as far north as Bella Coola. So, which is, it's just been a bucket list to try and make it up there. It's been really fun. That being said, you know, it's not been easy. It's definitely, you know, I feel really grateful that I love training. I love the process. I love riding my bike. I love running. I love swimming, except when it's really cold in the ocean, like it was April and May. I was really suffering earlier in the springtime. But now, especially that the pools are open, it's been a lot better. I find every off season when I don't have race goals that my mental health really plummets. And, and that, you know, honestly has been something I've struggled with in the past couple of months and has allowed me to the space to actually, do some work on myself as a person and who I am and my emotional self. I'm actually incredibly grateful for this space and time to actually sit down with myself and start doing some work on making me a happier person. And that has it's been really, really hard, but it has also been a really fruitful and incredible experience. I honestly feel like I am coming out of this summer as in a lot of ways as a totally different person.
Better person. Yeah. And, you know, I think it's a topic that no one really likes to talk about, particularly athletes, because athletes are often characters where they always like to have everything under control. I mean, type A, we talk about it all the time, obsessive compulsive. I've got this. And I think a lot of athletes that are struggling right now mentally, and I know some that are, but are too, I don't know if the word ashamed is the right word, but just don't want to admit to it because it's almost like showing a flaw in their character or a weakness. Or they're embarrassed about it because it's like, well, I don't want to whinge about something so small when there's so many horrific things happening in the world. But what people need to understand is you can't compare yourself to others. You need to look at yourself and help yourself, because by helping yourself, you are actually helping others. And I think that just because you're feeling low and sad and depressed because there is no racing, because there is no goal setting, you're basically not being able to do what you thrive at doing. So you've got a right to feel depressed and to feel down about it. And I have conversations with athletes every day feeling, don't feel guilty about this and don't feel like you're being melodramatic, because this thing is real. And even myself not being able to do my job properly as a professional liaison, you know, my job is to liaise between race directors and professional athletes to get athletes on the race line. And I can't do that. So, you know, there are days when I wake up in the morning and I am 100%, I'm depressed. You know, I do like you. That's when you need to sit down and you need to look at ways to get yourself out of it. But I just wish people wouldn't be embarrassed about it and know that it is a completely normal way to be feeling right now. And I'm pretty sure if you sat down and had an honest conversation with any human being on this planet right now, everyone is going through this horrible state of depression.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's so important to talk about. We know that there are a lot of incredible athletes out there who struggle with mental health issues. And
yes, absolutely.
And the more that we can talk about it, the more normal it becomes. And I also think that, you know, I kind of joke that those pro athletes who are like just showing their like most epic, awesome workouts and everything is smiling and wonderful and everything all the time, it's actually really boring. It's hard to connect with that. It's hard to connect with someone who doesn't really seem human. And and that's something that I really enjoy about this sport is the community that comes along with it. And, you know, I, of course, I am racing at the professional level and you know, have this life that I am living. However, we have this whole group of amateur athletes who are in the same boat. Like, everybody is struggling with their mental health in one way or another. Everyone is feeling the impact of this, and it's really normal. And the more that we can be open and honest about that, the more normalized it becomes, and the more support that we're going to have around us. You know, that's the experience that I've had with, like, if I have been public about some of the struggles that I've been having, the support that I get is incredible. It's yes, amazing. Yes. It's really, really amazing to have, you know, I don't get people who are like, oh, just stick to swim, bike, run. Or like, we don't want to hear about this. Like, nobody's telling me that.
No.
Everybody's like, I'm in the same boat, or like, you know, just giving words of encouragement. And that community is out there. That support is out there. And I really had this profound experience. So I have a part-time job that I do at a sexual health non-for-profit. So we provide sexual health primary care throughout the province. We have an education department, and we have like a basically confidential phone and email service that we run. And my work there is, you know, I showed up for a shift at work, and I was really distraught. I just wasn't feeling well at all. And, you know, was about to just say, I can't do this right now. I'm not well. And as soon as I started helping people, as soon as I started speaking with people and providing them with the information that they were looking for, and hearing that gratitude from them, all of a sudden I was like, no, actually, like, this is fine. Like, it was incredible. The feeling of helping other people,
how it turned you around. Yeah.
Turned me around. Yeah. And I think that is so powerful that, like, if we are really in this dark place ourselves, that reaching out and helping other people, if we can, is, it actually can make such a big difference in our own mental health. And what a time to be reaching out to help other people.
Absolutely.
Like, there are a lot of people in need right now.
No, I totally agree. And as I mentioned to you before we started, you know, I've taken on a little extra role of coaching a little junior swim squad. And
fun. Again,
yeah, and it is fun, exactly. And I remember when I first decided to take it on, I'll be honest, it was like, okay, I need this financially, so I'm going to take it on. But it's become so much more than that, because I can go there being a little down with the day's work, or just not feeling that productive because there isn't that much work on. And then I come home every night and my husband Justin's like, wow, you're in a good mood. And I'm like, yeah, I am, because these young children that I'm coaching just give so much back to me in return. So it's actually been the most wonderful thing. And you're right, you know, I think it's all about coping mechanisms. And like you said, if you can reach out and help someone else, the turnaround that it has on yourself personally is huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Now, Canada's been pretty good with the whole COVID situation, you know, fairly similar to Australia, although we're starting to go backwards a little bit right now. But is it looking likely that there will be any sort of racing going ahead for the remainder of the year, or is it looking likely that, you know, there'll be no racing till 2021?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, what has been happening so far is there have been some cycling time trials that have been going on. I'm actually considering doing our national time trial championships this year, but not sure if that's going to go ahead. There is rumor that there is a small triathlon that's going to be happening in Alberta, I think, that I've heard of. You know, really, it's, everything is up in the air.
Yeah, of course.
I still don't see how it's really going to happen. nothing. Of course, no big races. I'm still hoping there's some gravel races, some local ones here on the calendar still for September. So I have my fingers crossed for that. But, you know, in terms of right now crossing the border, for anything happening in the US, I don't know if any of that is going to go through right now.
And at the moment with the border, Canadian-American border, if you do cross over into America, coming back, it's automatic quarantine.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So you can't, there's no driving or walking across the border. You can fly across the border. And when you come back, you are 14 days quarantine.
And in a hotel, or is that a home quarantine? So, or is it you actually get escorted into a hotel?
No, it's at home. Yeah.
Okay.
It's at home. And I have heard that they are doing checks on people.
Yeah. We tried that here in Australia, but it didn't work. Now it's forced quarantine in a hotel where you've got security and you can't leave. Yeah. They tried the home quarantine, but yeah, too many people broke the rules, which is, I laugh about it, but it's just so disappointing that human beings just aren't taking it seriously. Sometimes I just think I put the news on every morning and I think that's one of the worst things that you can do, going back to, putting yourself in the wrong state, because often I'll finish watching the news and I'll be so depressed and Justin's like, why do you continue watching it? Stop. So, you got a point there. But, what was that?
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm so happy that right now in Canada, our CBC News, no longer the like top headlines are about COVID.
Oh, you're so lucky.
The same thing, I would just like open the news webpage and it was just like COVID.
Yeah.
Numbers of cases and numbers of deaths this day. And I was just like, you know what? I don't need this every single day. Like, I know what's happening.
Don't.
I know what we need to do. I know that I can catch up once a week or something, but just couldn't do it.
Exactly. And I think that's the problem that a lot of athletes, or a lot of people, sorry, but obviously when I'm talking to athletes, it seems to be the issue is that there's just, it's almost too much information and too much in your face. And I think it's just like you said, once a week just to catch up and then that's it. And since I've been doing that, it's been so much better for me personally.
Yeah.
Just going to the pool. I went to squad this morning and I turned the news on this morning. I shouldn't have. And I turned up to the squad in completely the wrong attitude.
Oh, no.
But the great thing is I swim with so many amazing athletes that, after the warm-up, they're all forgotten and I came home feeling great. So that's why, obviously sticking to routine and making sure you get out there for training and for exercise. So it's just, that's another thing I think so important for an athlete's mental state is it definitely helps me every day. If I didn't, obviously I don't compete anymore, but if I didn't have my training, I think I'd be in a far darker place, that's for sure.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we are so lucky as athletes who, for those of us who have been able to get outside and still train or train inside, we're so lucky to have that outlet, that physical outlet to deal with some of the emotional stuff that's going on.
Yeah, I totally agree. Now, just before I let you go, obviously, let's pretend we live in a perfect world and 2021 is going to be back to, I don't like using the word normal because, what is normal anymore? I'm going to stop using normal because normal is continually on the change. But let's say the new normal. 2021. Obviously, the plan is to race. Coming to Germany in July and then Kona World Championships in 2021. Are there any other goals or aspirations to do any other races? I know. You're one of those athletes that actually does like to throw in a couple of different things. As you said, you do your gravel riding and racing. You've done in the past. I know you did that really cool event that I watched, the Red Bull.
Red Bull 400.
Yes, Red Bull 400. Thank you. Where you ran up that crazy ski slope. Wasn't that? But that's, they're the sort of events I love. If I was ever to come out of retirement, that would be an event I would do. It looked amazing. So are there any plans?
Oh, yeah, you would crush it at that. Well, you've got those like powerful quads and man, you would absolutely crush it. You need the quads and the hamstrings and the glutes for that one, for
okay.
sure.
Okay. Oh, that I definitely have. There's no doubt about that. But yeah, any aspirations to do any sorts of events that are a little off the beaten path?
Well, I've had it in my head for the past couple of years that I really want to hit some of these major gravel races.
Yeah.
I was on a podcast with one of the organizers for the Dirty Kanza, now known as DK. And, you know, that's been a big one on my bucket list for a long time. It's challenging with those because they are usually around the same time.
We're
all sort of in the peak Ironman stuff and or the iron distance racing, and the races are, you know, longer, as long, if not longer, than iron distance racing. And so it's not something that you can just throw in there and, you know, do in the middle of a training block. Those are really on my bucket list that I really want to try fitting in. I have these dreams of doing at least one of the extreme tri series. Uh-huh. I just think that would really suit me, and it they're in really incredible
beautiful
places. So I think
and are you talking really about races like Norseman or
like Norseman?
I have a very good friend here who's also a professional athlete, Meredith Hill, who did Norseman 1 year, and she said, bucket list event, amazing, you'll never see scenery like it. Will she ever do it again? Probably not, because I think it, and that's the whole idea, isn't it? It is that extreme, but she said it was an experience that she will never, ever get again.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. So, I mean, that's what I'm looking for, right? These are the things that are on my bucket list, are these really unique races and experiences, that are the most mentally and physically challenging that I can find. That's really where I like to be. I like to challenge myself. A lot of times I don't really care where I show up and the results. Like, for me, it is about going out and pushing myself as hard as I can and having an incredible experiences in beautiful places.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I think the more we can do that, the more we learn about ourselves and just pushing boundaries. So I think it really helps shape our character as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
Well, listen, Rachel, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you. You're an absolute champ. You always have been in my eyes, but you know, I've been looking forward to this podcast for quite some time, just because, you know, you're just such an interesting person. Apart from being an absolute, as I said, a beautiful soul, you're fascinating and so intelligent and so articulate. No, I could go on, but yeah, you really are. And it's been,
I'm blushing.
Oh, good. And, you know, I can tell you now that nothing will make me happier than sitting next year in the beer garden in the Challenge Roth race area and enjoying a schooner of beer with you post-race.
Oh, amazing. That sounds incredible. I'm dreaming of that already.
Oh, it'll be great. It'll be great. Well, listen, you take care, and thank you so much for your time today.
Absolutely, Belinda. It's always wonderful to chat with you. You're just a joy and such wonderful energy. It's great to be around.
See, I can finish this podcast. I'm going to be in a great mood for the rest of the day now. I'm happy. Thanks, Rachel. I'll speak to you soon.
Okay, bye. Take care, Belinda.
Bye. Bye. Thanks for listening to Coffee Calls with Belinda. I really hope you enjoyed listening. If you'd like to continue listening and stay updated on our latest podcasts, then please subscribe. It would also be great if you could rate our podcast and leave us a review. If you have any specific questions you'd like me to ask the athletes, then please send through to the following email address, podcast@challenge-family.com. The making of these podcasts would not be possible without the wonderful help of our great partners, Powerbar, Otso, Zone 3, Lubos Bilic at LB Training, Sport No Limit Group, and VeloSoc. But for now, thanks so much for listening, and I'll be back soon for another coffee.